is American Family Mutual v. Roth. Mr. Tedards.
Good morning. My name is William Tedards, representing the Roths. We're the appellant.
Are they identical twins?
They're supposed to be. I think I can tell the difference now, though. But yes, I believe they are. I think they're not fraternal. This case is another case coming up in what I've seen to be a perennial question, which is what degree of control can an insurer exercise over the policyholders when the contract agent has departed? That's the basic question. In this case, there are two control mechanisms. One is a one-year covenant not to solicit the customers, and the other is a trade secret misappropriation claim growing out of a computer agreement. Like most of these companies, this American Family company has switched from paper to computer, and they've got a set of arrangements that put that into effect. And their trade secret misappropriation claim originates in the idea that when they include the word database as something they own in the computer agreement, that means they own all the information that the agent put in it. Although, as I...
It seems exactly what it says, right?
Database, it can't be abstracted, though. What database has to be in that agreement is something that they developed and licensed to the agent. And when the information about the policyholders...
It's a collection of digital information. And their agreement provides that anything in the database, any of the digital information in the database, is the company's information. Company owns it. What could be clearer?
I thought it wasn't clear when I looked at it, because that information, which is garnered by these agents over time, some of it is put in the database, some of it is not.
Well, if it's put in the database, then it's the company's property. That's what it says.
I didn't see it that way myself.
I don't understand you. What is the alternative interpretation of those words?
The alternative interpretation is software and database is the same as software and related documentation in the Nationwide case. That's the alternative explanation.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, we had the same issue in a case involving the Nationwide company.
The other case. What are you trying to say about software?
I'm saying that database in this case appears in a computer agreement whose purpose was not to allocate the ownership of anything. It was to switch the company from paper to computer. That's the only purpose of the computer agreement. And this phrase in that context, when we know that the database is something that the same agreement says is developed by the company, which is not the information. The information is developed by the agent and is licensed to the agent so the agent can put the information in. That's how the database is described in the agreement. And so in a nutshell, that's why I think you ought to read database differently. Yes?
Sorry.
But that, of course, doesn't quite answer the question, because We've only raised that issue.
Software in the database contains confidential, etc. information. The agent will not disclose to third parties such information, right? What's ambiguous about that?
I think the word database is ambiguous if it's something that's licensed to the agent.
What does database mean?
I'm only concerned with what it means in that agreement. And I think in that agreement, it means the system they developed and licensed to the agent so the agent could use it to submit applications. That's what I think it means in that agreement.
I don't understand that. Trade secret information is what, part of the software?
Well, it's software, hardware, manuals, instructions, and formatting. In other words, how they organize all their information so that it can be manipulated to conduct their business. That's what I think it is.
That doesn't make any sense at all. Look, we know that the company wants to conceal its customer list. Of course it does, right?
Its customer list?
What's in the database? Customer information. Of course it wants to conceal that.
Well, it didn't want to conceal it the whole time. When it was paper, there was no basis for any trade secret claim like this.
Why not?
Well, because they didn't have a computer agreement to put this phrase into to use to assert a trade secret claim.
Was that data always collected prior to computers here?
And this was
valuable information,
right.
I would have think, because it's the
yes.
names of people who are hot prospects for
yes.
insurance and what kind
yes.
of insurance needs they have. Have they ever been insured by American Family?
Yes.
So it's really valuable stuff.
We're assuming it's valuable. Secret valuable, so that it has an indicia of a trade secret. Yes. But before the computer agreement, it wasn't the exclusive property.
Well, the computer made it easier
company.
For a company like American Family to collect and store this information, didn't it? So now they've done that.
Well, the computer agreement is a different way to do it. It's the modern way to do it, and everybody does it.
Before the computer, the agents were free to take this information out of the customer information that the company gave them and show it to other people?
Yes. There's nothing except that one word in the computer agreement. The way it worked before, and it still works the same way analogously now, the agent had paper files in his office. The company had paper files in their, you know, central offices. The information was shared. It was the agent who put it in by virtue of an application. In the computer agreement, the agent has the computerized information.
The agent got from the company.
They didn't get any information from the company.
It got nothing from the company?
Not of the information that's in dispute, which is the customer information. No, that always comes from the agents.
It got no customer information from that the company had collected from other agents?
When an agent leaves, the company needs to get a new agent to service it, and so they transfer that agent's information over.
An agent. Now, and he collects information, gives it to the company, right? Pre-computer?
Yes, both ways.
But he gets information from the company's files, too, about customers, doesn't he?
No.
You said it was shared both ways.
No, what I mean is the agent gives it to the company with no restrictions.
What does the agent get from the company, if anything?
He gets the system to put the information in.
The company never refers him to customers? Never gives him customer information?
Virtually never. There's no evidence of any appreciable customer development by the company. Above de minimis. There's no evidence of it. The evidence is, and it always is this way in these companies, the agents do it all. That doesn't mean somebody can't find an 800 number, call up the company, and get a reference to an agent. I'm not saying it can't happen, but it's so insignificant, it's not even in their business plan.
So the agents don't share any information with each other?
Well, they can if they want. But they don't have to.
Do they?
Typically not. Until one of them leaves. And if one of them leaves, then obviously the company wants to keep the business, so they've got to get another agent to service it. That's a point at which the information transfers. But it's a little bit counterintuitive to assume that this information magically becomes exclusively the information of the company just because they switched to a computer system. If you just think about that, for years and years, it was not the exclusive property of the company vis-a-vis the agent. Then all of a sudden it is.
But couldn't
because they computerized
access this database and get information about other customers?
Could who access it?
The Roths.
About customers other than theirs?
Could they access the database?
No. To get information about customers other than theirs?
Yes.
No. If the agents wanted to share information, they'd have to do it on their own. But the company would not provide a channel by which the Roths could go over and review the information of a set of other agents.
Now, you rely on this Nationwide case. Is that what you were...
I cited it as the most closely related case I could see.
It's very different, the language, because it says it refers to software manuals or related documentation.
Yes.
That clearly is information relating to the operation of the system. It's not customer information. The language in this contract is broader, the trade secret information.
Well, it's database versus related documentation. That was the most analogous decision I was aware of.
No,
but I agree, the term's different.
The database is, look, you need software, of course, to manage a database and so forth, mm-hmm. access it and all that. But the database is separate. That's the collection of information. That's the contents. That's not the form.
I think in this agreement, it's something they license to the agent, and that can't be the information, because the information is what the agent puts in after they get the license. They license the system to the agent so the agent can put the information in it. And I just don't see how you could say that something they license to the agent, which is what they say the database is, right there in that same endorsement 10, I don't see how you can say that's the equivalent of the information.
So, there's this federal question you cite falls under the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act and the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability. I can't track that. That doesn't appear in the briefs.
It will not. In fact, it's no longer in the case, I believe. It's still in the complaint. It's still allegations. But I think that American Family has probably concluded that it can't succeed in furthering a cause of action under those privacy statutes. So it's diversity jurisdiction primarily. And that was, but those allegations are still in the complaint and were the basis in the first place asserted. The only other important point about this database that I don't want to lose track of is that whether the Roths win or lose the interpretation of the database issue is not what actually decides the issue that I've put in front of the panel. What American Family said is that since the database is theirs, the Roths cannot use a separate address book that they have. They have a name and email address book referred to in the briefs as Exhibit 34. American Family says they can't use it because they downloaded it from their database, and I believe the record makes it impossible to back that assertion. It's an address and name and address system that they developed on their own.
You said before that they couldn't access the database except for their own information, but the agreement says that they have the right of access to the system through a terminal in the agent's office. It doesn't say anything about it. They can only get their own data in the system.
I know that what I told you is true, and I believe if we looked at all the formative documents that are in the record of that computer arrangement, I think you would be able to conclude that.
Pretty important.
The fact that they can't access that?
Yeah.
Important to whether their name and address book is theirs? Their separate name
important
and address
to
book?
The meaning of, to the meaning and the purpose of this confidentiality agreement. I mean, obviously, if they can go roaming through the database looking for all sorts of customer information, they can't print it out and use it in their own business.
I see what you mean now.
Relations with a company. Yeah. Now, what is it? Somewhere in one of the briefs says that they left because of concerns. What's that about? Why did they leave?
Their contracts were terminated by the company.
Why? What are the concerns that led to that?
Well, the termination itself is another litigation.
Great.
And everybody's got a position on that. we think they were terminated.
Suits. I'm sorry. That's good. Keeps the profession and the judiciary busy.
Well, they sued us and we sued them. Basically,
why is that a separate suit? Why isn't that part of this suit?
I don't know the precise history of it. I know that when the case was filed in the state court, removed to the federal court, placed under the same judge, but the two have not been consolidated, to my knowledge. They're just sitting there as parallel cases. And why there was no consolidation, I'm not sure.
You don't represent them in the other case?
I do now. I took this case at the point of the appeal of this case and took everything else along with it.
So another case pens before Judge Guzman in the Northern District?
Yes. Yes. A termination case. There's another one if you want to know about it.
Okay.
There's an NASD arbitration that's been filed alleging that a fraudulent U-5 was filed with the NASD, the document that a registered company has to file if they terminate the contract of a registered rep. That's a third litigation that exists also.
Okay, well, thank you.
May I take 1 minute in rebuttal?
Okay, we'll give you rebuttal.
Okay,
time.
Thank
sure,
you.
That's no problem, Mr. Tadaris. Thank you. And Mr. DiNardo?
Excuse me. Good morning, Your Honors. We think it's perfectly clear that just as you pointed out, Justice Posner,
Judge, we're not the Illinois Appellate Court.
Okay, Judge Posner, the contractual agreement that the Roth entered clearly provide that database is American Family's proprietary property and is a trade secret. The parts
well,
that
what rights did they have in that? Did they have the right to look at anything except their own data?
No, they could only look at their own data. They could not search that customer database for other people's customers. That is part of American Family's obligation under the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act and the HIPAA Act to keep customer information as confidential as possible so that only the...
Okay, but doesn't that support Mr. Tadaris' argument that really it's their own information, and the fact that they were required to put it into the computer doesn't mean that they couldn't use it?
I don't think that supports his position for this reason. The contracts all say that data is American Family's information. Number two, not all that information is put in there by each individual agent. Mr. Tedders was not quite accurate when he described to you the situation. What happens is when agents leave, their customer, their policy information is given to another agent. That's American Family's information. They give that the information to the agent. They get it from American Family. And in this case, the record shows that American Family gave 2,000 insurance policies. They transfer them to Connie Roth during the course of her agency. So she had the benefit of the customer information, American Family's customer information, on 2,000 policies that she didn't initially get secure on her own. That information was American Family's in American Family's database, and they gave it to Connie Roth. Interestingly enough, the amount of names on this Exhibit 34, this document that say they kept in their own database, had about 1,847 names. They'd gotten 2,000 from American Family. Reason and common sense tells you that most of that information they got from American Family. But as I say, the fact that they cannot access other agents' information supports the position that that information is confidential, it's proprietary,
no, I understand
and it's a trade secret.
No, I think your argument about the 2,000 is good, but 1,847... Were their own clients, their own customers?
No. 1,847 was the number of names on this Exhibit 34, the list they kept in their computer.
Right.
American Family had given them 2,000 policies. What I'm saying is,
so we don't know.
Common sense says almost all those policy data was names for American family names. In addition to which, they have testified that all of the names on Exhibit 34 are American families.
Before the computer, what would have happened? So before the computer, you would have given them the 2,000 accounts, right? So then what would their rights or your rights have been in those?
We don't have the contracts prior to the computer, and there's no evidence that the computer was put in or that these contracts were signed simply because they were changing over. But the status of the law prior to computers is the same. If an employer has a customer list and it's treated as trade secret, it comes with all of the elements of trade secret, that's protectable. In fact, there are three very applicable cases, and they really come into consideration in the second part of the...
Before you get to the case, but just looking at the preliminary injunction, the second paragraph says that the defendants are enjoined from servicing American family customers. And I think in your brief you acknowledged that this was not very appropriate language.
Well, we modified it. We agreed that there might be modification to restrict them to the customers that were their customers at the time they were terminated.
Right.
And as I say, the law for that...
But what does servicing mean in this context?
They were listed as their customers on the date of their termination.
But what is servicing?
They were their customers, simply their customers.
Servicing.
They can't solicit them. They can't contact them to solicit them.
That's what servicing means?
Yes.
I see. That would include soliciting for new business.
That's correct.
Is that a term that's familiarly used in the insurance industry?
I don't know. We used it when we put it in the preliminary injunction because it seemed reasonable to us and clear. Okay, so the status of the law prior to computers was that if you had a customer list and it was in paper, logbook, whatever, and
the computer doesn't affect the
doesn't,
law.
Not at all. Not at all.
You have both a trade secret and a contractual.
That's correct. Let me address a couple of things. You're absolutely right with regard to the distinguishing the Nationwide case. The word database is never mentioned in those cases at all. It is mentioned in American Families, and the database agreement says that the agents will have access to that data subject to rules and regulations. If that database agreement wasn't clear enough, and we think it clearly is, the rules that they were subject to, one of which was the American Family Security Policy, which is on the web, and they acknowledge they had access to the web, and it says American Family is the sole owner of all ideas, concepts, programs, data, or other results of employment-related or contract-related efforts. This includes work performed on company time as well as job-related work prepared during off-duty hours. So the contracts and rules are crystal clear that this database is American Family's information. They own that information. They spend millions of dollars a year protecting that information so they don't run afoul of any confidentiality statutes. American Family owns it. There's nothing in the contracts that takes away from that, and there's nothing in Nationwide that takes away from that.
What if the Roths got a new customer and they, you know, make a notes about the customer, and then they type the notes into their laptop and upload it into the database and so on. So they would be forbidden to download that stuff and use it after they left and so on. But what about the notes they had made? Would those be your trade secret?
Absolutely.
They're working for you.
They're working for us. Their agreement
said.
I beg your pardon. Go ahead.
So they say while they're working for you, any customer information they get becomes your trade secret.
That's correct, and that's what our contracts say.
Well, we just have the computer contract, right?
Well, no, we have the database agreement, and we have the policy, which was on the website, which says.
So you're saying the website policy is incorporated,
sure.
And that makes clear that it's not the digital form; it's the content that is
right. Because the database agreement says the American Family will grant a license to the agents, subject to rules and regulations determined by the company. And that's a regulation. And so, and that's the second part of their argument. And it's the one they used in the trial court, which neither Magistrate Cole nor Judge Guzman thought was any good, and we don't think it's valid either. And that is that simply because they had this information in their computer and they didn't download it from American Family's computer, therefore, it's not American Family's data. It's their data. That does not seem a rational position to me. It's the same as if, in your example, they wrote their notes first, then submitted it to American Family and said, well, we didn't take it from your computer. We just copied our notes. So it doesn't matter whether they copied it first, put their notes first, then put it into the database, or whether it was in the database, and then they put it into their computer. In each case, it's American Family's data, and they can't use it. That is why the preliminary injunction was entered.
Well, what if, let's take a situation, if American Family hires a new agent, and that agent receives 1,000 or 2,000 names or policyholders or something like that, and then as the new agents, I think, always do, they have a bunch of people they've serviced, their brothers and their uncles and so on. Now they sell them American Family policies. Now American Family terminates them. And this injunction would prevent them from having any contact with any of those people?
It would.
So
that would be a very small amount of people.
For their mother.
That'd be a very small amount of policies, and
but those are not accepted under the.
They're not accepted. No.
Under the.
They're not.
Injunction as it is.
They're not. Now those people, as a practical, I'm not certain what would happen as a practical matter, but the injunction would apply to that because of. Of the fact that the Roths misappropriated that trade secret from American Family. If they hadn't done that, there wouldn't be any preliminary injunction. But the purpose and the main basis for the preliminary injunction was the fact that they took, and in Judge Guzman's, I'm sorry, in Magistrate Cole's words, that constituted a theft of American Family's property.
In my example, you don't need the database to know that you sold a policy to your... your mother.
That's right. That's another thing. But the main purpose of the preliminary injunction was the misappropriation of the trade secrets from American Family, and that was the basis for the second part of the second paragraph in the preliminary injunction, that they can't service customers. And it really, that second paragraph is not based on the covenant not to compete. Magistrate Cole said that. He said basically the covenant is an analytical irrelevancy. It's the misappropriation of the trade secret and the use of that trade secret that is the basis for the second part of that injunction. And, in fact, there is case law to support that. It's cited in our brief. One that is not cited in our brief, but that was cited by Magistrate Guzman on page 37 of his report and recommendation, is a case called Miller versus Landis. And in that case, some salesman left a custom tailor shop, took the customer information, started contacting the customers. The tailor shop went and got an injunction, and the injunction had these clauses, these provisions. And in that case, there was no confidentiality agreement, and there was no covenant not to compete. It was a strict trade secrets, misappropriation of trade secrets case. And the court entered an injunction prohibiting those salesmen from solicitation of any customer of the plaintiff as of the date they terminated. It prohibited them from referring to, utilizing, or publishing any customer list or customer information. So that's exactly what the second paragraph of the preliminary injunction in this case says, and the court addressed your concern, Judge, and they said, well, you know, the salesmen are saying this is a very broad injunction, and we might just by happenstance contact someone who's a customer. And the court said, a court must take steps to ensure that defendants are not using a general solicitation as a guise for soliciting people on the stolen list. The injunction is worded as narrowly as possible because fraud in the taking theft of the customer list has been alleged. And in our case, proven. Accepted by Magistrate Cole and accepted by Judge Guzman. And
why were they terminated, Ross?
They were terminated for breaches of the Registered Representative Manual, which governs their sale of securities products, and for breaches of the Life Compliance Manual, which provides guidelines and procedures for selling life insurance policies.
This is why there's an NSAD.
That's correct, the first one.
So let me just ask you one more question. If we upheld the preliminary injunction, is there anything for a trial?
I would say no. I would say that we should get summary judgment on the preliminary injunction issue. And we'll, of course, be asking for a permanent injunction. But I think
there would be any purpose in a remand if we upheld the preliminary injunction. Whether we should just, in that event, make it permanent. I'll ask.
I think that would be eminently reasonable, Your Honor.
We do sometimes convert a preliminary injunction
right.
proceeding to permanent.
I would request that you do that.
Okay. Well, thank you
Welcome,
very
Your
much,
Honor.
Mr. Mr. Tedders, we'll give you a couple of minutes. So,
here's what the undisputed facts are about how this Exhibit 34 came to be. The Roths purchased leads using their own funds, found people, made up an address book consisting of a name and an email address, and then check to see if those people might be able to buy an American Family product. And if they could, they submitted it into the American Family database. Not the email address and name, but other information, the appropriate information to apply for a policy. And what American Family is saying now is, since that customer made it into our database, you cannot use the address book that you made up at the beginning when you were establishing the relationship with them. And their theory of it, which has been disproven in the record of this case, is that that address book was downloaded from the American Family database. That is an insupportable argument now. That address book was not stolen from anybody. It was developed as and it's just name and email. It's not some policyholder, characteristic analysis. Those names and emails were for their own future marketing purposes, and then they put it into the American Family database if they thought they could buy an American Family product.
If that's right, then they're
they're
still subject to the 1-year non-compete clause. But not to forever under a trade secret theory.
The covenant not to solicit would apply regardless of any of this.
Right.
That's right.
But that has a 1-year limitation.
It terminated in February of 2006, and the injunction was entered in August of 2006. And we don't think it should be resurrected by an injunction.
But, you know, you can sell your trade secret, right? So suppose I have a trade secret, I go to work for a company, and the company says you have to give us your trade secret as part of the employment deal. Well then, you know, it's gone. Then I can't ever use it again, even though it was mine originally. And that's their basic argument, that when the Roths go to work for American Family, any information that they have about customers and so on, they are required to upload into the database, and then it's gone, and they can never use it again.
Well,
that's very common, right? You go to work for a company, you bring your intellectual property with it.
But there's just one thing wrong with it. There's just one thing wrong with it. And I think we clarified this in the brief, if you want to go back and look at it there. The computer agreement requires the Roth not to submit all their customer information. For example, it doesn't require them to send their address book in, and they didn't send it in, their email address book. American Family doesn't even collect email addresses. It has no relevance to their business. The computer agreement requires the Roths to submit new applications and changes in applications only. Nothing else that they collect, their notes, their email address book, none of that has to be submitted at any time to American Family under that computer agreement. So the company does not require them to send this information in at all. They required them to send in new applications and changes. If you look right in endorsement 10, that's what it says. And that's obviously consistent with the computer agreement, because the purpose of the computer agreement was to process applications electronically.
Are you saying that they never, none of the information that they submitted to the database, they took with them when they left? Is that what you're saying?
Here's what they have. Let's say I'm Bill Tedders. I sent in my name saying I'm looking for a quote. A lead company got that. The Roths purchased the lead. The Roths then contacted me.
What did they put in the database?
Well, they contacted me, and they got my email address, and they put that in their address book that they have,
what
that American Family.
What did they put in the database?
And then if I...
Don't give me if. What did they put in the database? Did
my application. My application for an insurance product.
Is any of the information that they put in the database information that they want to use now?
My name would be on the application. If they would put my application into the database, and my name would be on it. And it would also appear in their address book with the email address. That's the overlap right there.
And the application has a lot more information than that, though, doesn't it?
Sure.
It tells you what kind of insurance you're interested in,
sure.
Your age, your history. And
right,
all those
and none of that's at issue here. None of it. What's at issue here is an email address book that they used for marketing prior to putting people into the database to try to sell them an American Family product. That's the thing that's at issue here. That's the only thing they have.
Now, I'll ask the same question I asked your opponent. If we upheld the preliminary injunction with some modification of this paragraph 2, which American Family agrees is too broad, is there anything left for a trial?
If you upheld the preliminary injunction, you would have to say that you've concluded that that address book
that's not
came
my question.
Down from
that
from the
not
database.
My question is, if we uphold the preliminary injunction, is there anything left for a trial?
Yes.
What?
All they did to satisfy Judge Guzman and get a preliminary injunction was to convince him that they had a better than negligible chance of proving that the information at issue was commercially valued because of its secrecy, in other words, a trade secret. Judge Guzman said, that's all I'm considering, because Guzman...
What additional evidence would be presented at a trial?
Whether it was misappropriated.
That's an issue?
Yes. Yes. The only way they could misappropriate, if you assume that the database is theirs, is American Family's, meaning the information, the only way they could misappropriate that would be to take it. They couldn't misappropriate it by having their own previously established address book.
You understand. Suppose they have a comprehensive application. They write it down on a piece of paper, and then they upload it into the database. and then they use that original handwritten application in their future business. That would be forbidden. That would be misleading.
Of course. That's an application. Of course. That's not a name and email address book.
It's an issue whether they used any of the applications or just used their address book. Is that what you're saying?
It's undisputed that they only use their address book.
So, Mr. Taylor, if using your hypothetical, they did not enter it in the database until it reached application status. You wouldn't just put a name in.
Let's put it this way. They were required to put the application in the database.
If it got to that stage. But I thought you said the address book sometimes contained just a name and an email.
That's all it ever contained.
Yeah.
It doesn't contain anything else.
Would the address book have a name and an email if there wasn't an accompanying application in existence?
Yes. The address book has many, many prospects who have never, ever heard of American Family.
My inquiry is, would it just having prospect status get you into the database?
No. No, it wouldn't automatically get you in there. I cannot tell you, because the record wouldn't tell you, whether they voluntarily might have put something else in the database. I can't tell you that. What I can tell you is that what they were required to put in is the application or the change in an application. And I can tell you that the email address book has nothing in it but a name and an email. It's not an application. It's not even close to it. And I know that the name and email address as such was never put in because there are no email addresses in the American Family database. So they're two completely different documents.
But you admit there's some overlap, obviously, of names.
The name, right.
Names of the 2,000 accounts that were referred to them?
No, these names would not be, and the reason is because of the source of the email address book.
Are you sure of that?
No, I can tell you that.
Are you sure that none of the names are of these 2,000 reassigned policyholders?
What I can tell you is it's clear how they assembled the address book. They assembled it from leads and contacts. Now, if they had a separate contact with one of those policyholders, it could be.
What about the 2,000 names?
The 2,000 policies?
They didn't enter any of those names in there.
Well, let me say two things about that. First, that 2,000 policy figure is not.
What does the record show?
The record does not corroborate the 2,000 policy figure. It's a statement that was made. It's subject to being litigated, as a matter of fact. But let's assume they got transfers. Let's assume it. It's possible that a transferred person could end up in the email database if through some other method the Ross contacted them and let's say they were talking to them.
Everything's
or
possible,
whatever.
Of course,
yes.
The Ross are not highly credible witnesses.
On this point, which is they're undisputed on this point, though.
It's not undisputed that they didn't get any names out of the list of the reassigned.
No, I mean it's undisputed how they developed their address book, their name and address book. That's undisputed.
When you say how they developed it, what does that mean? That there's no possibility that they took a name from the database and put it in the address book?
Correct.
How is that record reflected? Never took a given name and placed it.
Correct.
It only morphed the other way.
Correct.
What does the record show of how many of the names in their address book are from those 2,000 referred accounts?
It doesn't show. What the only issue is what's called Exhibit 34, which is part of their address
book. You have a list of 2,000 referred accounts. What's the overlap?
You don't have the entire address book in the record, is what I'm saying. It's not there. They picked one email communication.
Your clients have the address.
The clients have it.
Why is that in the record?
The clients were never asked.
Well, they'd better put it in the record. Going to be a trial because
it
turns out that there are 1,000 names in common between the referred list and the address book. They're dead.
There are way beyond those 1,800 people in their address book, but that was never litigated in that preliminary injunction, the full scope of it. The only question is whether they had the right to use the ones that did overlap. That was the issue.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. DeMiller. Right, all right, we'll hear from you. What is it you want?
Bonnie Roth testified that the information on this Exhibit 34... Go ahead, Your Honor.
I didn't hear you.
Bonnie Roth testified that the information on Exhibit 34, which is in the record...
That's this email...
And it contains the email and...
The name.
The 1,847 names and emails. She testified that Exhibit 34 is almost entirely the same information as in the American Family Database. She testified that there is actives, inactives, and prospects on that list. And in fact, in Exhibit 35, which they printed off from the American Family Database, are all the information on the policyholders, and names, addresses, and emails are there. There's also plenty of case law that says a name is a trade secret. They know who the customers are. So if it's even if it's just a name, it's a trade secret. And there's also testimony and analysis by Judge Guzman and Magistrate Cole. They matched Exhibit 34 with the other exhibits, which had American Family customers. 85% to 90% of the names on Exhibit 34 were in American Family's database.
Thank you, Mr.
Your Honor. Thank you.
So, Mr. Tedards, do you want to respond to that? Well, this will be the last round, but we'll give you the last word.
Thanks. As to who's in it, as to who's in their address book, I saw the preliminary injunction record in subsequent litigation that I've done on the case on the merits. It's very clear that 1,847 names is not the total universe of their address book. That much has become very clear to me as a matter of fact. The reason that 1,847 names is what the preliminary injunction was about is because they sent out a mailing to that group. And
that group overlaps with the database.
You have to have overlap because every person they sold a policy for American Family went in. Yeah.
1,800 of those names are names from the referred accounts.
No, I wouldn't think that would change it at all. I don't think it is, but I don't think it would change it.
Really?
Yeah. And I can tell you why it's not likely to be, if I may. Just let me do that. If you look at how she developed it...
He said she testified that there was substantial overlap.
There is.
The 1,847 names are in the database.
There is, because if they sold them a policy, it went in the database too. Yes. You would have to have overlap in order to do that. The question is, can they reach back and confiscate the address book because they put it in the database? Now, as to whether it's referred policies...
Right.
It couldn't be. It couldn't be. Because the testimony, not disputed, is that it built up a few names at a time off of purchased leads. That couldn't be referred, you know, or what, transferred policies. Couldn't be.
Okay. Well, thank you. We'll try to puzzle that out. So thank you very much, both counsel.